AM 640, you have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. This is the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show. Did I hear Claudette say 111 degrees in Burbank? Oh, my goodness. Hi, Claudette. I want to say hello. I haven't met you yet.
Hi, Wendy. It's so nice to meet you as well. I know. I don't want to step out of this studio. 111? Are you kidding
me? Okay, well, you're in air conditioning, but I am not. And I'm on the third floor, little loft here. I want to set the scene for everybody, wearing my shorts and a little t-shirt and my wet hair piled on my head so I can keep cool during the show. So if you hear dogs barking, babies crying, I'm not in coach on Spirit Airlines. It is because I have every window open to try to get any air in or out, even hot air. As long as it moves, it feels better. Anyway, welcome, Claudette. Wow. I hope I don't mess up your last name. Stefanian, how'd I do?
Oh, look at you. Right on it.
Well, I lived in Italy once, so there we go. You got like France and Italy going there. Nice to meet you. Eric, we got you on the boards.
Yes, ma'am. How you doing?
Oh, I'm good. At least you're in air conditioning. 111
yes,
degrees
there
in Burbank.
Goodness.
And producer Brooke, are you with us?
No air conditioning?
I know. Is it crazy? People
That's
who live
crazy.
At the beach don't have air conditioning.
Here at the beach, you don't have that. Yeah. So welcome to our world.
Exactly.
Yeah, wait. Although, what's by the beach by you, Dr. Wendy?
Say that again?
What's the temperature by the beach by you, Dr. Wendy?
92. No air conditioning.
Oy.
Just saying. Okay.
Oy.
It's 111 for you, but you're in air conditioning. Okay, so babe, cooler or not. And then Brooke, like before the show begins, she's texting me going, okay, when you turn on all your equipment, turn off every other thing in your house because we don't want to have a brownout in the middle of the show.
That's right, but I'm ready. I'm ready no matter what.
Okay. Yeah, you might have to finish the show for me, Brooke. You have the rundown. You can go for it. Well, welcome to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show. Happy Labor Day. Labor Day traditionally is the first Monday in September, so that's tomorrow. And we are celebrating, what are we celebrating? Workers, American workers, at a time when we have such high unemployment.
You can't do your head. It's okay.
I know, but there's a silver lining here. Because the U.S. economy added 1.4 million jobs in August, and that sent the unemployment rate below 10% for the first time since March. So this is really at least a glimmer of good news as our famous pandemic continues its march across the country. Employment rate right now is about 8.4%, which is a pretty positive indicator. So we are celebrating those of us who are working. And as I said, I can't remember if it was last week's show or the week before when I was talking about survivor's guilt, that, you know, many people who have been able to pivot their businesses in some way or work from home may be feeling like a kind of survivor's guilt because we are still able to work when so many people we know are suffering so terribly. I mean, the service industry is really, really still hurting. So, you know, our heart still goes out to those people. And hopefully as we dig out of the economy as a whole, everything will come back. And once we get that vaccine, service will come back. I'll be first in line for that massage, folks, when we have a vaccine. So many people are entertaining, hanging out. I hear there's a lot of beach action out there. I don't know if you can even hear the cars going by and the loud motors. I'm hearing it. Eric, are you picking it up in my mic?
No, I don't hear anything.
If I close the windows, I'm going to pass out. So, you know.
Don't do it.
No, we don't want you to pass out, Dr. Wendy.
Okay. So I just want to give everybody a little bit of a reminder. I know we're well into the weekend and you've had 2 days to make mistakes. About how to safely gather with friends or family this weekend, because it's really important that we say it over and over again. These aren't moral choices or moral decisions. These are health decisions for everybody. So obviously, make plans to remain outside. Nothing going on inside. You should not have people into your house. Wear masks at all times when you're not eating. You know, I actually flew last week and it's my first time flying, a very short flight, just an up and down. But I wore the N95 mask, a face shield, gloves. And when they give you a little, a Ziploc bag with a few snacks and a little bottle of water in it. I did not touch that thing. And I did not take my mask off on the flight or in the airport because I just didn't want to be exposed. So, you know, if you do have to travel, go on a full stomach Make sure you go to the bathroom before you get on that flight. If you're out with family units, keep each family unit separated at least 6 feet. This little bug flies through the air, folks. You know, my daughters last night went to a comedy show at UCLA that was social distance. I think they sat on the grass and they had towels, and then they stayed at least 10, 12 feet, like push it, get away from everybody. So there's a way to do it. Make sure if you are eating food with family outside that everybody has their own food, their own condiments, their own utensils. I know it sounds like a pain in the butt, but this is how outbreaks happen. You may have read about the wedding in August, I think it was August 5th, in Maine, that seeded 147 cases of COVID, and 3 people died. But the most important fact here is that the 3 people who died did not attend the wedding. In other words, you can pick it up, you can have a mild case, you can take it to someone who can take it to someone, right? So that's how you accidentally become a super spreader. Let's see, if food is shared, separated in advance with small containers. You know, I actually packed a picnic for a friend this week, and a social distance picnic, yes, in a park. And I happened to have in my cupboard, I don't know why I had them. Maybe I'd gone to Smart and Final to pack something for kids' lunches at one time. But I had this huge like restaurant stack of tiny little, like, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 ounce containers with a plastic lid. So I put everything in individual containers. It was so easy. Of course, the most dangerous thing is using the bathroom or a kitchen to prep or replenish your foods. So you have to talk about this in advance. For instance, this week I was to attend a social distance book group in a backyard, wearing masks, being separate. And I told them I had traveled, and they're like, well, that's okay. We'll give you a separate bathroom. And all of a sudden I read into that. They don't want me there. So I said, oh, typing on my email, I don't want to raise anybody's anxiety about the bathroom problem. I will just stay home and be on Zoom. So I was on Zoom and they were in the park. You know, I mentioned that my kids last night went to a comedy show. My kids aren't kids. They're 17 and 22. At UCLA. And when my younger daughter, because she has so much social anxiety, when she goes out in public, now she was with her older sister, she was going to be fine. When she's out on her own in the world, I always wonder if, God forbid, she were ever stopped by the police for any kind of questioning because, oh, she happens to be African American, and she would be unable to respond at the time. I know how she gets when she's nervous. She just shuts down and her face displays nothing. And I think about this a lot. And I'm sure, well, certainly all Black mothers worry about that for their kids. But specifically when your child has any kind of invisible disability, and then you add the racial thing on top of it, to live with that kind of fear is huge. When we come back, you're probably aware that last night was a fourth night of protests in Rochester, New York, over the death of Daniel Prude. You're going to hear from his daughter about who Daniel Prude really was, and I have some comments to make about how I think it's unfair that we ask our men and women in blue to suddenly be mental health professionals. Anyway, we got to talk about this when we come back. Later in the show, you know what causes most divorces? Poor communication skills. That's what people put number one when they fill out forms. Why did it fall apart? Poor communication. I've got a communication trick for you that just might save your marriage. And I got lots of other stuff. So stay with me. Sit back. 2 hours. You are listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more.
KFI AM 640, you have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. So if you follow the news, last night was the fourth night of protests in Rochester, New York, over the death of Daniel Prude. It was, according to news reports, the largest protest yet. Sadly, it ended with pepper balls, tear gas, and fireworks. Rochester police said they arrested 9 people, including 2 on felony charges. and three officers were treated at local hospitals for injuries sustained as a result of projectiles. He died on March 30th. Now, he was a man from Chicago. He was visiting his brother in Rochester. The medical examiner ruled Prude's death a homicide caused by complications of asphyxiation in the setting of physical restraint. Now, he apparently was telling people, he ran into the street naked, and apparently he was telling people that he had COVID. So the police officers called to the scene are not mental health professionals. They're assessing their risk, his risk, everything going on, and they put a hood over him called a spit hood to protect themselves. And, you know, there's no one right answer to this. It's a sad, sad situation all the way around. But I want us to take a moment and remember Daniel Prude as somebody who wasn't just sort of a crazed man on the street, but a father of a daughter. Eric, would you play the tape I have of Daniel Prude's daughter talking?
My dad is not the animal that they treated him like. That is a human being. That is my father. That is somebody's brother, son, cousin, nephew. Like, this was one of the most loving people I have ever known in my life. And my father was a protector. He would do anything for his family, anything for his kids. He had a bright personality. He's the type of person that if you're going through something, you go to him and he's the one who will give you words of encouragement. Or he'll be the one to tell you a joke to make you laugh if he knows you're having a bad day. He picks up on when you're having a bad day, and he does anything in his power just to see you smile. And I'm hurt that the media didn't get the chance to actually see him in that state.
You know, when Joe Prude called the police on his own brother, he was asking for help. Daniel Prude, who suffered from mental health problems, as I mentioned, had run naked into the street. When officers arrived, the encounter quickly turned violent. This is an issue that we as Americans and mental health professionals have to figure out. You know, we historically haven't done so well in treating our mentally ill citizens. You know, for most of history, people with any kind of mental health disability were simply locked away in institutions. Many of them were state-run. Then around the 1950s, because there was so much physical and sexual abuse that was being reported and all kinds of other inhumane practices, then it took a couple decades and a lot of public comment for us to finally shut down all those hospital-like institutions. The thinking was we would return people who suffered from mental illness to their families, to their communities. Eric, I'm sorry, did you say we're near the end of the segment already? And I have a point to make. Okay, when we come back, I want to tell you a little story about what happened when someone was having a psychotic break in front of a restaurant in Berkeley, California recently, and a different way that authorities responded. Also, do you have people partying in your neighborhood? Would you call the cops? I'm going to be taking your calls later in the show. You're listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. KFI AM 640. You have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. This is the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show. We're talking about the history of mental health services in this country and how we still haven't figured out how to take care of good American citizens who may suffer from mental health issues. First of all, we've got to remove the stigma from it. That's one of the big problems. I mentioned that once we closed a lot of these hospital-like state-run institutions, the idea was that there would be community-based mental health services and assistance for families dealing with family members. But as you may recall, in the 1980s, the government cut funding of those centers. And so as a result, we haven't filled the gap, right? We don't have the supports there that we need. And instead, we make our good men and women in blue try to become mental health professionals. And I think that's absolutely unfair. I really do. I don't think it's the job of police officers to be a mental health professional. Now, recently my daughter was working and she was in Berkeley, California, of course. You know Berkeley, right? They seem to have figured it out. And a homeless woman was having a psychotic break in a restaurant, like a patio area of a restaurant, public street, but right in front of diners and everything. So the owner called a number. And when he explained what was going on, rather than sending the police, they sent a social worker. And the social worker was familiar with the woman, knew that she lived in the neighborhood. She was a neighbor, sat her down on a bench, asked if she was hungry, gave her some drink, gave her something to eat, got her a little bit more regulated. Then he went back to the restaurant owner and said, "Would you like me to call the police? She seems calm now, or should we let her be?" And the restaurant owner was fine with what had taken place. You know, then you don't escalate. You de-escalate. And again, I worry so much because people with mental health issues or developmental disabilities, they often appear to be oppositionally defiant only because they may not understand the directive. They may not understand the question. They may not respond as quickly as a neurotypical person. This is why I worry about my daughter out there in the world. And that's why we need to find a better solution. Okay. While we're solving social problems in the world, someone said to me, "Why did you get involved in that?" I said, "Because I'm a menopausal mother. I am like the custodian of the social order." You know, we're the only species except killer whales that has menopause. A third of our lives where we are wise, energetic, healthy, effective, smart, experienced, mouthy, and sterile. So why would evolution have created us except that we're in charge of taking care of the next generation and governing the culture, because we are a social species, really. So here's my next one. So last night, we have new neighbors next door, 4 single girls in their early 20s. Should be lovely, right? But you know who shows up when there are 4 single girls in their early 20s. Eric, could you guess if there's 4 single girls in a house, who shows up?
Tinder dates.
Guys. Yeah, lots of guys, right? That's what happens. They trail. They smell them, I guess, and they just show up, right? So before you know it, they're having a party that sounds like a frat party. They're clearly doing shots, yelling shots, cheering, whatever. And I'm thinking, there's a pandemic going on. Don't we have rules? So I want to remind everybody, the latest information I found was from Thursday. On Thursday, although we're starting to flatten the curve, we're flattening the curve for a good reason, because we're doing all this social distancing and mask wearing and hand washing. We're doing what we're supposed to do. So if we stop doing it, then it shoots up again. Get it? So it's not, COVID hasn't gone away. It's not going away for a long time. All we can hope to do is flatten the curve. So as of Thursday, we had around 1,200 new cases and 61 new deaths. That's just on Thursday. Okay. Now, LA County has been dealing with rogue parties because they've realized that these rogue parties are causing infection rates to soar. They've been turning off the water, sending the cops, whatever. Okay, so here's the rule. I looked it up online. So everybody knows what the law is right now. This is from LA County, and it was dated September 4th. You should have no visitors. I'm reading directly from the document. You should have no visitors other than people who need to provide essential services, such as caregiving or repairs, right? So if your parents working from home and you need to have some childcare there because you're working and they're homeschooling and you got little kids, you might need a caregiver. If a pipe is broke and water is leaking, yeah, you might need a plumber. But otherwise, that's it, folks. And even when the iHeart tech guy comes over, Tony, to my house, he can tell you, I keep my mask on and I stand out on my roof deck and I don't even stay in the house when he's there. Individual and family gatherings or parties of any size are not allowed in LA County right now. In Santa Monica, they prohibited gatherings and landlords might have to pay up to $1,000 in fines. In the next segment, I want to take your calls. I haven't taken your calls for a long time because this is a highly contentious thing, right? When should we call and report somebody if they're doing it? I did not, but because I'm afraid to call the police now, right? Of course, my daughter said, "Mom, they're white. They'll be fine." Isn't that terrible? It's heartbreaking that she would think like that. So in the next segment, you can give me a call at 800-520-1534. That's 800-520-1534. And I want you to help me understand. Would you call and report a neighbor or party? Would you let the police know that there could be a super spreading event happening in your neighborhood. Remember, the wedding in Maine on August 5th caused 147 cases and 3 people died. And they weren't all at the wedding. It's just like where they went afterwards. Or would you just say, to each his own? And there's a reason why I'm asking you this. Because we are both a collective and we are fiercely individualistic. And this is one of the reasons why America is having such a hard time clamping down on the virus, because we are both things. We have great compassion for each other. We don't want to hurt each other. We want to save as many people as possible. But at the same time, we don't want to be controlled. We don't want any government telling us what we can and can't do in our own house, like have a gathering of family, right? And friends. Not supposed to do that, folks. So I'm really curious if you've had anything like that happen in your neighborhood, or if you've held a gathering, you can stay anonymous. Give me a call, because I do want to hear from you about what, because I couldn't make the decision. I didn't call, but I was like, oh, you know, I don't know what to do. Okay. The number is 800-520-1534. Eric's going to be picking up the phone in just a moment. 1-800-520-1KFI. 1534. You are listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
Oh, help me, please, doctor. I'm damaged. There's a pain where there once was a heart.
KFI AM 640. You have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. So the question is, if your neighbors were partying, creating some little super spreader party, would you call and report them? Of course, the problem is, someone wrote on social media, yeah, I'd call a social worker. We don't have social workers to call. That's the problem. We only have like one level to go to and they show up with guns. Eric, do we have any callers?
Yeah, we got a few. The first one is Bob in Encino. Bob, you're on KFI.
Hi, Bob. It's Dr. Wendy.
How you doing?
Good. So would you call on a neighbor?
Actually, I actually had this happen 2 weeks ago, 30 to 40 people, no cops. Nobody called the cops because they were all 15 and under. Mm. And we know that, statistically, that's a zero transmission, although does wonders for herd immunity. So we did the right thing.
So you did call or you did not call?
No, did not. We did not. Why would we call? There's zero chance of the virus being spread or harming anyone, zero at a party where there's 40 people under 15, zero, statistically zero, yet it does boost herd immunity.
Well, we certainly can debate that with the epidemiologist. There's a reason why the high schools are closed. Bob, thank you so much for calling. Who we got next, Eric?
Next, we got Heath in Artesia.
Hi, Keith in Artesia. It's Dr. Wendy.
I would absolutely not call. I don't think it's the government's job to be monitoring us.
Okay.
It's one thing if you're annoyed because they're making noise. There's, you know, laws that we put in place for that. But most of these laws have just been forced down our throats, and it's ridiculous. So I would not complain. And at this point, if someone wants to put themselves at risk, they should be allowed to put themselves at risk. We're supposed to have freedoms in this country. And everyone needs to get behind people having their own choice and freedoms.
And Keith, you so perfectly expressed that side of the argument, thinking as an individual rather than a collectivist point of view. And that is one very important American value, individualism. Thank you, Keith, for calling. So basically, Keith is saying that we can call the police if somebody's putting a sound in our ears that we don't like, but if they could be putting a germ in the air, then it's okay. All right. Who we got next, Eric?
Up next, we got Rob in Pasadena. Rob, you're on KFI.
Hi, Rob in Pasadena. We got all the men calling today. How are you?
Yeah. Hi, Dr. Wendy. I'm doing good. Thanks for asking. This is something that's very personal to me. About 3 weeks ago now, a friend of mine actually passed away from COVID complications.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. So from that point forward, even before that, I've been just very aware of the risk factor is that not only one can put yourself in, you can control that, but then there's the other stuff that you can't control, which this is where neighbors come in. So, for example, one of my neighbors, they actually had a landscaping project happening, but then towards the end of the project, they kind of had like a little end of project get together, and it included folks that were doing the work and so forth. So I knew that none of them lived there, or most of them didn't live there, one. And then two, they weren't wearing masks. They weren't practicing social distance. But also,
and you could see them in the garden with no masks and close together?
Oh, yeah.
How many people were there?
There was at least, let's see, maybe 10 to 12. So it wasn't a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But with COVID, it doesn't take a mass gathering. All you need is one person to have it, and that person can start spreading it. So I was very mindful of the proximity of my house and my property. So for that time, I literally felt trapped on my property, because I knew that if I were to go out to my backyard, for example, that I, in essence, even though it was outside, I would be exposed to whatever it is that they were doing. So make a long story short, I did end up calling the cops. I ended up calling the cops, and I made them aware that because there was a lot of traffic going onto the property, but also exiting the property. And at that time of the day, there's a lot of families walking, you know, with their kids and so forth. And again, they're not wearing their masks and so forth. So the cops did come. The cops came and pretty much told them that, you know, for folks that don't live there, if they're not from the immediate household, that the recommendation is for them to leave. And look what ended up happening. It actually did work. They all left. And that was put an end to it. So I'm hoping that more people would do this. Some of the other callers that are calling, talking about rights and talking about all this, I'm not sure if they've had the impact of knowing folks that have got it or in drastic case, someone who has passed from it like I have. But until it hits close to home, until it hits closer to your social network, to your family, you always seem detached from it, and it seems like it's someone else's issue potentially. It's like a data point or a statistic that you read about. So believe me, it's out there. Folks can look like they don't have it, but they can definitely be spreaders. And by the way, it does happen also with kids and children.
I'm
an educator as well, so I'm very mindful. Yeah,
Thank you, Rob, for saying that as well too. Okay. They're wrapping me up, but I'm so sorry for your loss of your friend, and thank you for sharing that. I have known five people who have had the illness, and one person who died. So it is real to me too. Eric, do we have time for one more? Oh, that was a big no in my ear. Was that just in my ear? Or did you say it on air too?
No, that was just in your ear.
Just in my ear. He's like, no. I'm like, okay. Sorry. I get it. We're running out of time.
Sorry.
So cute. Okay, when we come back, I want to, you know, I'm an evolutionary psychologist. I'm always asking the question, you know, what's natural for us? What did we evolve to be? And we think of this term survival of the fittest a lot. But when we come back, I want to talk about why we're here on the planet and have taken over the planet. It may have to do with survival of the friendliest. You're listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. KFI AM 640, you have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. This is the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show. Some people on social media have been asking me why I posted a picture of that adorable little rodent. I think it's called a kangaroo rat on my social media. And it's because I actually look worse than a kangaroo rat right now, so I wasn't going to put a picture of myself. But it is a shot from, or it's a species that's featured in this new series I'm watching on Netflix with my daughter called Tiny Creatures. If you haven't seen it, it's fun for the whole family, folks. I don't know how they shot this thing, how they got the animal. They make sort of little stories and plots with these wild animals, but they're tiny and they're adorable and it's just so cute. So I had to put a kangaroo rat on my social media because I look like a drowned rat. All right. Survival of the fittest. So some people think that Darwin's idea of survival of the fittest meant that the bigger you were, the stronger you were, the mightiest you were, the more you could beat up the most people, the more aggressive you are, the more likely you would be to survive. But that is an absolutely wrong idea about how evolution works. Darwin's idea of fitness referred only to how many offspring you leave behind. And gentlemen, you know, you don't have to be tall and brawny and have a deep voice, although that's one way to attract women. You can be smart. You can be kind. You can be funny. Women love that stuff too, right? So, you know, if you look at, and so basically our friendliness as a species, evolutionary psychologists argue, is actually one of our biggest successes. And I mean, we are not the top of the food chain, folks. Lions should be running the world. Sharks should be running the world. But we have these really interesting big brains in that we have amazing social worlds. We function as many one mind. So to show you how friendliness wins, why don't I compare us, Homo sapiens, to two of our closest cousins, bonobos and chimpanzees. Now, you know about chimpanzees. Oh, yes. Alpha male pummels his way to the top. He's that old version of survival of the fittest, right? So he actually, believe it or not, one of the ways that he forces other men to signal their total submission to him, yes, the alpha chimpanzee makes them kiss his testicles. It's a real thing. His fights can be deadly. If you don't do it, you could die. He uses his power to monopolize females. And that way, he has more offspring than other males. Now let's look at our other cousin, bonobos. We also share 98% of our DNA with chimpanzees and bonobos. Clearly different DNA. Bonobos don't have an alpha male. Instead, females who are smaller than the males form these coalitions to prevent any male from ruling the group. Did you know that if a bonobo rapes a female, the girls all get together and attack him, and they've been known to bite off his penis? Oh my goodness. So male aggression does not pay in bonobos. So the big question is, who's got more reproductive success? Are those alpha chimpanzees leaving the most babies on the planet, or the friendly bonobo males? Turns out, bonobo males leave far more offspring than even the best chimpanzee. So let's talk about us now. At one point in our history, there were 23 different species of humanoids on the planet, including Neanderthals. And they were pretty, you know, social too. But why did only us remain? And it has to do with our ability to sense each other's feelings and to be kind and to share. Listen to this. No other animal recognizes what anthropologists call in-group strangers, which means is you're either in our group or you're out of our group, except Homo sapiens. We hand a newborn baby to a complete stranger. Okay, they're wearing a lab coat. We call them a doctor. But still, a chimpanzee, you try to take a newborn baby from a chimpanzee, they'll bite your head off, right? So that was my phone just beeped, and I have it on off with no sound. How is that possible? I can't figure it out. Also, can anybody please on my social media tell me why my phone keeps overheating? I have to keep putting it in the fridge. It literally, like a thermometer, shows up on the screen on my iPhone 11, and it'll say, you know, it's overheating. And I go and I put it in the freezer for a couple minutes, and then it calms down. And I've done it three times today. Is it just the heat? But if you know how I can fix
that. Is it your battery?
I don't know, but it's a fairly new phone, too.
I'm pretty sure it's just,
I don't know then.
I'm pretty sure it's just to prevent the battery from overheating.
Right, but why would it do it suddenly today? Get all heated up.
Well, the temperature outside.
Oh, yeah. And inside my house.
You got no AC going, Dr. Wendy. Come on.
Exactly. I'm sitting here sweating onto my microphone. Okay. So back to us friendly people. See, you just saw an example of that. Look at Eric and Brooke jumping in, almost total strangers trying to solve my problem. They're not total strangers. So what happens is we encourage each other to perform acts of kindness. We do things like donate an organ to a stranger. We help strangers cross the street. Now, here's the problem. Our increased friendliness also created a weird form of aggression, because the more we connect with each other, the more we love each other, we create bonds that are so strong that our friends feel like family. And when you get that feeling, you're also ready to violently defend them against any threat. That's when you get into the in-group, out-group idea. And I want to talk about, on the same sense, this evolution of people who might self-identify more conservative in their political beliefs and people who might identify more liberal. I'm not a big fan of identity politics. I think of voting as a behavior, not an identity. It's not who you are. It's what you do and some of your belief systems. If you haven't seen it yet, psychologist Jonathan Haidt, his 2008 TED Talk called The Moral Roots of Liberals and Conservatives is so eye-opening because he talks about this innate moral programming that we all share all together, which is we care about protecting each other, harm versus care. We care about fairness. We care about in-group loyalty. We also want some degree of authority and some degree of purity. So it's harm, fairness, in-group loyalty, authority, and purity. And what happens is if you have a society with too much openness, too much everything goes, do your own thing, then the society falls apart. And if you have a society with too much authority and too much punishment, then the individual starts to die. We need both, or else we will fall into disorder. You know, think about in our anthropological past. So we're sitting around a campfire with our friends and family, and a group says, you know, the food's getting kind of scarce here. I might think about getting in a canoe and going out onto the horizon in this blue water to see if the earth is flat or not, to see if there's other land over there. And one group says, no, don't do it. It could be dangerous. You have to protect, fear-based thinking, right? And so the other group heads out over the canoes, over the water, and plenty of them perish. But a few of them don't. They even got all the way around the planet to the new world, right? And then the ones that stayed, who said, we're safe. We didn't get in those canoes. We're not going to find new territory. We can figure out food here. Some of them died because they were running out of food in that location. But some of them survived. As a result, we have evolved to have both kinds of brains, and we need both kinds of brains in our species. And the one thing that people who vote conservative and people who vote liberal share in common is compassion. We care about each other. We have a naturally evolved sense of friendliness and social connection. And I really encourage, if you haven't done it, for you to get in a car and travel around America, and you are going to find that pretty much everybody's the same, that we really don't have these differences. Now, the media likes to make differences in us because their whole job is to sell ads and keep us addicted to whatever media source or news source we listen to. But you have to know that we're so much more alike than different. And what we share as human beings is so powerful. And this is why we've evolved. We are many, one brain. Speaking of that, when we come back, did you know that you can catch feelings, literally, like somebody else's feelings are totally contagious onto you? I'm going to explain the mechanisms of how that happens, and if they're negative feelings, how to keep from catching that virus. When we come back, you're listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. KFI AM 640, you have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. I forgot to tell you, there's another movie I saw last night, sitting by myself alone, because, you know, I know there's a lot, there's a lot of virus floating through the air, and so I'm staying in pretty much all Labor Day weekend. And I watched this movie on Netflix called, oh no, I had to pay for it, on Amazon Prime, called Irresistible with Steve Carell and Rose Byrne. Brooke, have you heard about this movie yet?
I have not, no.
Oh, It was supposed to be the big summer comedy release, and now we have no theaters, so it's a pay-per-view all over the place now. I think I had to pay, as my daughter said, it must be really popular because you have to pay $5.95 for it. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, if we went to a movie theater and bought popcorn, that would be like $100 for us. So,
anyway, those actors, was it good?
Really good. And what's interesting about it is it's about a political campaign in a very small town. And he's a big political, what do you call those people that run campaigns? And he comes from DC thinking, oh, I'm going to make this Democrat win in this red state, in this red area. And then, of course, Rose Byrne shows up as the blonde political activist on the Republican side. And it's really the two of them from the big city fighting and saying derogatory things about the people from the small town. I will not give the ending away, but I will say the people from the small town are way smarter than those city slickers. So I was watching this movie and I was thinking, you know, how silly it is that so many of us have these such hardcore identities and beliefs. And I was watching the two actors in their characters becoming incensed with each other, and they could just trigger each other so easily. And it made me think about how feelings really are super, super contagious. And it's a thing, emotional contagion. And it's defined as a process in which a person or group influences the emotions or behavior of another person or group through the conscious or unconscious induction of emotional states. So the writer of an article I was reading about emotional contagion today said, she was a psychologist and she was working in an office setting, and there was somebody who was sort of a negative person all the time. You know, I was about to say, and I had to stop myself because my kids tell me this is now politically incorrect to say. I was going to say this person was a Debbie Downer. Remember we always used to say Debbie Downer and that was okay, Brooke? Do you remember that?
I do. SNL did a whole sketch about it.
I know. And now it's sexist, apparently. Women are not down unless we say Debbie and David Downer. I don't know. So anyways, this person was a downer at the office, and this person went on vacation for a week. This is real life. And all of a sudden, everything shifted in the office. People were laughing more. They were telling more personal stories about themselves. There was a better group cohesion. And it made her think like, wow, this one person was like, you know, a little drop of water in oil who was just, you know, making everything go havoc emotionally. So how does it happen? Well, first of all, you should know, remember I said we're a social species, right? So when you meet somebody, whether you know it or not, the first thing your face does is it mimics their facial muscles so that you're showing empathy towards them. You're showing that you understand them, you get them. Your facial muscles, muscles start to do exactly what they're doing. And this is our way of emotionally mirroring somebody. It's unconscious and it's automatic. But as soon as your face does that, those muscles now send messages to neurotransmitters in your brain. So let's say the person is grumpy and you furrow your eyebrows to show empathy for their grumpiness. Like, yeah, that sounds bad. You had a bad day, right? All of a sudden your brain gets the message, the muscles are furrowing. I must be mad. And before you know it, you're feeling the same feeling. Now, most of the time, people are not aware that they have caught somebody else's feelings. Usually we will attribute them to something entirely different in our life because we're not aware that this happens. Interesting enough, the researcher from this article I read said that people who are most emotionally contagious are often those in positions of power. Yeah, our bosses, our spouses, our very close friends, because we pay more attention to them. Okay, so how do we not fall victim to emotional contagion? Well, just being aware of the fact is the first thing. Don't attribute your bad mood to some other thing in the back of your brain that you're mad about. Just think about what's happening in the here and now and what your face is doing. And the second thing is go verbal. The thing you got to do is address the issue. So let's say somebody is unconsciously injecting you with negative feelings. You're responding negatively. You might say something like, huh, I feel like I'm in a bad mood all of a sudden. I wonder what's causing that. Say it out loud in front of the person. That's weird. Wonder how that happened. And I've actually done this. I mean, I know one person who has what I call toxic positivity. She's just always happy and very dismissive of any feeling that is not happy. But I'm a very empathic person. So I actually think she's got like some underground rage and she's accidentally injecting it into my body to act out for her. I know. It's complicated. Isn't psychology complicated? Also be thoughtful. You might be the source of contagion. So think about what you're expressing out there in the world, right? Hey, when we come back, you know when people get married, they change, don't they? We know that because we're looking from the outside. Most married people don't think they change. Well, I've got some evidence to show they do, but they change in very specific ways depending if you're a man or a woman. You're listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Hi, AM 640, you have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. I love that we're now doing the Employee of the Month. It's so much fun to vote every month. And I think producer Michelle should next organize like a game night for us. Don't you think, Brooke and Eric? Like we need to like do some stuff together. If we can't do a softball league, we should get together on Zoom and play games.
Yeah, do like a Zoom trivia night or something with the whole station.
Yeah, I do game night with...
That sounds fun.
I know. I do game night on Sunday nights with a group of women. And we play this... We used to play Taboo... And now you had to go on Amazon and order your own taboo card. So everybody has their own cards. You know how you divide it into teams and your friends have to guess what words you're saying, but you're describing, but you can't say the words on the card, that game. And then we switched to something called like Scriblio or something where we're given words and we have to draw the picture, which I'm really bad at. So I wish we would go back to straight old Taboo. But there's all kinds of games. We could be, you know, be good for us. I think I'm going to put that out into the universe because I miss everybody. Okay, speaking of people and how we connect, marriage. You know, people say, oh, marriage didn't change me. I'm no different at all since before and after. Well, guess what? You're wrong. We see on the outside how you changed once you got married. Now, some people will say, well, married couples just mimic each other so much that they just grow more alike over the years. But new research out of the University of Georgia says that marriage itself can change your individual personality. Now, the whole nature-nurture argument on personality has pretty much been settled. It's both. It's both. You're born with a set of genetics and predisposition to be extrovert, introvert, whatever. But there are major life events that happen in the course of the life of your lifespan that also shape your personality. And marriage is one of them. We also know, for instance, that you can change your personality. Great example. Somebody who's a very strong introvert, but who really desires to teach and share knowledge can learn to be extroverted in the classroom. I happen to know that there are a couple people on air at KFI who are serious introverts until the microphone is on. And all I can say is when they go off their show, they must be exhausted. You know who I'm talking about, don't you, Brooke? It's amazing. But I'm an extrovert from the moment I wake up until the moment I go to bed. So doesn't change me at all.
That sounds exhausting to me.
It's not. I get my energy from people and I get my energy from talking. That's why I do the round robin. Make sure Claudette's there. Make sure Eric's there. Make sure you're there. I mean, I need my people so I feel together.
Okay. The same way I get it.
Yeah. Okay. So let me say this. Have everybody heard of the big five personality traits? It's sort of the most accepted theory of personality. There are five. It's called OCEAN because it's an acronym, O-C-E-A-N. And I'll rattle through them. And then I'm going to tell you how they change depending on your gender and if you get married. So the first one, if we're thinking of OCEAN, is O, openness, how open you are to new experiences. Do you like to try new things? If you're low in openness, it means that you're comfortable with just being with what's familiar, ordering the same thing on the menu, staying in. You like your schedule. You're not like, let's get on a plane and go to 16 new countries. Let's do something fun. So that's high or low on an openness scale. C, conscientiousness, how dependable and orderly you are. So if you are, and I will just say right now, I hope it doesn't embarrass you, Producer Brooke. Producer Brooke Peterson is the most conscientious person I have ever met in my life. This woman dots her I's, crosses her T's, does what she says she's going to do, gives you all the detail you need. And she is the perfect balance for my brain because I'm a little less conscientious. I keep a neat and tidy house. I will say that. My computer desktop is okay. But I'm like a broad strokes person. I'm the open person. And so she's my conscientiousness. Although there's research to show that conscientiousness is one trait that goes up as you get older. And it's true. I've been much more organized as I get older. Okay, then we've already talked about this. Extroversion, how outgoing you are. That's the E. A is, or doing the word ocean, A stands for agreeableness, how well you get along with others. If you're high in agreeableness, you're easygoing, you're happy to do what everyone else is doing. If you're low in agreeableness, you've got to have things your way. Doesn't matter what everyone else wants. If you're neurotic, N is the next letter in ocean, that's about emotional stability. I mean, like Woody Allen plays a neurotic in a lot of his movies, right? You experience mood swings. You can be temperamental. If you're low in neuroticism, your mood is, you know, even keeled. You're pretty stable. And high, you're sort of up and down and nervous and worried. There's a lot of worry. So researchers analyzed the data after 18 months of marriage of a group of newlyweds to look at these five personality traits and if they changed once they got married. And guess what they found out? Okay, let's talk about them individually. Openness, wives showed decreases in openness. Huh, the researchers saying, well, maybe that just means that they've accepted the routines of marriage. That's terrible. So you jumped on planes and saw 16 countries and then all of a sudden you're married and it's like, no, let's just stay home. I could argue that maybe these couples who got married were, the women were nesting, planning to like set up shop as family. And so, yeah, they want to, they'll be less open. Interesting enough, conscientiousness, husbands increased significantly in conscientiousness and wives stayed about the same. This is us getting you organized, guys. That's all that is. Once you get married, you do need to put your dirty shorts in the laundry hamper. You can't just leave them all on the floor anymore. And yes, after dinner, you're going to help us load the dishwasher, right? That's improving your conscientiousness. You see, we're good for you. All right, when we come back, I'll talk about extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism, and what happens to husbands and wives after married. Also, the most common reason people divorce and how you can prevent it. You are listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
Help me, please, doctor. I'm damaged. There's a pain where there once was a heart.
KFI AM 640. You have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. Wow, we're in the home stretch of the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show already. How time flies when we're having fun. We're talking about if people's personalities change once they get married. And this was a study done at the University of Georgia, and it was done on couples who'd been newlyweds. They were married 18 months. One of the things that the researchers found is that on the area of extroversion, husbands became more introverted over the first year and a half of marriage. Now, they chalk this up to the fact that people's social worlds become smaller when they're married. They're more restricted to the other couple friends and their social networks. When you're single, you got to be out there, right? You got to absolutely be out there. You got to figure out how to, I figured out why it sounds like my phone is beeping. It's not my phone, Eric. It's my computer. And my computer I need to have on. You hear it? It's going.
No, I'm not hearing anything.
You're not hearing the ping?
No.
Oh my gosh.
Me
it's
neither,
coming
huh?
right out of my
You're
computer
good.
So loud. The mic's not picking it up. Amazing. Bing, bing is all I hear. Oh. Very weird. It must be a very directional mic, which is good. Okay, so let's talk about agreeableness. Both husbands and wives became less agreeable over the course of the study, with the downward trend especially noticeable for wives. Well, understand. Women tend to be more agreeable than men anyway. So maybe they just came to a set point. Maybe when you're dating, you have to go, yes, I like that. Sure. I'll wear your team jersey. Okay, we'll eat that. And then you get married and you're like, no, I'm not going to see that action adventure movie. Right? That's probably why. And then the men become less agreeable because she's not so agreeable. And then let's talk about neuroticism. Husband showed a slight increase in emotional stability. You see, gentlemen, we are good for your mental health. There you go. All right. Speaking of marriage, as you know, people worry about divorce. I looked at so many studies on divorcing couples and that ask the question, why? What are the problems in your relationship? And the lists include things like, well, we just lost enthusiasm, or I'm working too long of hours to be married, or I lack personal time and space. I want to remind everybody that every single intimate romantic relationship is a struggle, a constant conflict between union and autonomy. What is good for the group? What is good for the individual? Oh, just like our national landscape here and our social world. Obviously the big toxic stuff are up there, you know, domestic violence, substance abuse, cheating. I never count though, when people say, oh, we broke up because they were cheating. I always believe that an affair is a symptom of a problem. It's not the problem. There was some other stuff going on that led somebody to have an affair. But the most common thing that shows up on every single study I read was communication difficulties. Oh, poor communication. And so I wanted to give you guys a little quick lesson in how everything can go so wrong in marital communication and how to make it go better. First of all, there's a famous four sides model of communication done by a German psychologist, Friedemann Schultz. And he says every single message we say, especially in our intimate relationships, has four different facets, and they are fact, self-revelation, relationship, and appeal. Now, let me explain this. So let's say the wife says, we're out of coffee. That's a fact, right? So fact would mean the coffee jar is empty. That's the fact. The self-revelation might be, I need caffeine and I'm unhappy until I can make some more coffee. There's the little piece of her coming out in that bit of communication. So first the fact, the coffee jar is empty, then the self-revelation. And then because you're talking to an intimate person, the relationship statement. Maybe we're out of coffee is her saying, I wish you did more grocery shopping, right? You don't know. And then the final thing is the appeal. We're out of coffee. Maybe what she means is, would you go to the store and buy some? But we don't say that. We don't speak in concrete ways. We say we're out of coffee. And we could simply mean the coffee jar's empty. Or we could mean I'm addicted to caffeine and I need some.
But
or
Dr.
we could
Wendy,
mean, what?
You guys, need, if you're out of coffee, just say we need some more coffee.
But it's not only women who make this mistake. And I will say that men make the same mistake. A man will say a statement and there could be four things he could mean. Now, I'm going to add more complications to it. It's not only that there are four different things she could mean by the words we're out of coffee, but there are four different ways the partner can hear it. Again.
Oh, God.
Yeah, right.
How fact, do we do this?
I know, it's hard. Fact, self-revealing, relationship, or appeal. So let's listen to how he hears. She says we're out of coffee. He hears the fact. The coffee jar is empty. Or he hears a self-revelation. Oh my God, am I living with an addict? Why is she so crazy? Because she's out of coffee. Or maybe he's really sensitive to relationship criticism. So he immediately thinks, oh my gosh, she thinks I'm unreliable. And this may very well be the thing he reacts to. And then there's the appeal. He might say to himself, well, she didn't ask me to do anything about it. Like as Eric said, right? Say, go to the store if you mean go to the store. Don't say we're out of coffee. What does that mean, right? And so what we have to do as communicators is A, we need to understand that everything we say to our romantic partner has those four facets, fact, self-revelation, a comment about the relationship, and an appeal for something. And we have to understand that when we hear, we have our own discriminatory ear, that we also are choosing one level of that communication to react to. So the answer is understand your ear and understand what thing you're most sensitive to. Hey, Brooke, remember the time? I can't even remember what it was about. Let me think. Oh, I know. You sent me the rundown and I asked you something like, is there a guest or something? And you texted back at the very top of the email in capital letters. And I heard, she's yelling at me. She thinks I'm a bad person who doesn't read her whole email. And so I reacted defensively, and you're like, I wasn't being defensive. I was like, oh, that's weird. Communication happens. All right. Eric is in my ear telling me wrap it up. I want to remind everybody.
Eric.
I know, yes, sorry, I know. We could keep going all night. But there's another gentleman coming on air in a few minutes. So I just want to remind everybody, follow me on my social media at Dr. Wendy Walsh. That's at Dr. Wendy Walsh. Twitter, YouTube, two Facebook pages, and Instagram. And every Wednesday at 6 o'clock, I do a live stream where you can ask me any relationship question in the world, and I'll do my best to answer it. It's very fun, very casual. Sometimes I'm eating and drinking during my live stream. Depends how busy I've been in the day. And I am always here for you every Sunday from 4 to 6. Also, check out our podcast, Mating Matters, wherever you listen to your podcasts. You've been listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.